This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Now, to show our gratitude, we're not going to be like the other guys and jerk you around and bullshit you. We're going to tell you the truth.
Shane Douglas is the man who ignites the new flame of the sport of professional wrestling. The era of the franchise. The era of the ECW.
Nation, welcome to the most extreme menage a trois of violence that you'll ever experience. I am JT on episode 13 of PTBN's Extreme 308 Dance, an ECW podcast retrospective series. And joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, John Romano and Jennifer Smith. How are you both doing?
Look at you not fucking up.
I've shaken off the cobwebs.
Good job.
The Disney cobwebs are gone.
Back in the saddle.
Feeling good. I've had a good couple shows. Good PCB, a good war zone, strong body press. I'm back at it. You know?
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yeah, it'll probably be a shit show by the end of this one. Johnny, how are you doing?
Wonderful. Great way to close out the year. What'd you say, episode 13? Wow, I can't believe it's been 13 episodes.
It's crazy. I was
amazing.
It just seems like one was just yesterday.
I was thinking about that myself. Just now.
Yeah. It just seems like 13 minutes ago when
getting all wispy.
It felt like just a minute ago I was shoveling Dr. G's driveway for $10, but here I am. Here I am today. All right, guys. So we have been working our way through the history of ECW starting in Feb 94. Those new to the show, you should go back and check it out. But we've maneuvered our way to Hardcore Heaven, taking place August of 1994. You don't have to have the date, did you? I meant to mark it down. I feel like it's August
14th.
Yeah.
Thank you. We have been building up to this one quite a bit. We had some pretty good hype. We have some big matches on top in our usual undercard to set us up. So why don't we just go ahead and dive right in. We wasted no time getting to the action on this show. We waste no time getting to that action. Hack Myers is out first, and his opponent, as you could tell by that theme song, if you're used to being here, listening to this show. The Rockin' Rebel is out next, running solo tonight. No Jason with him, or any of the troop. Rebel is announced as, did you guys mark this down? His nickname?
No.
Rockin' Rebel?
The Ayatollah of Rock and Roll.
Oh, Rock and Roll, yeah.
So Chris Jericho's future... Little nickname. I wonder where he got it from. Stole it from the Rock and Rumble. The crowd shits on Myers as Joey talks about their falling out back at Heat Wave. Myers pounds away out of the gate. Rebel comes back with a neck breaker, lands some chops. Rebel hits a Russian leg sweep but doesn't cover. That's a trend in ECW lately, by the way. Rebel keeps pouring on the offense in and out of the ring. Rebel finally covers and only gets two. Myers punches back into it. We get some shot chance in the crowd during his flurry. Rebel comes right back with knees and a kick, gets back to work. Rebel gives up on a pin, and moments later, Hack spikes his head to the mat. Rebel tries to slam, but Myers shifts his weight and lands on him for the win. Not much doing here, just kind of more of the same, which is a trope I'm getting a little done with in ECW. Like, it was fine during the Mikey stuff, but we're just seeing it left and right, where the heel beats on the face and then starts joking around, doesn't really cover, fucks around, and the underdog gets the win. Like, it's a little bit much. It's actually kind of taken away, I thought, from some of the Mikey stuff because it's using it so many times here. But the crowd seemed to like it. It was a fine opener, like we've seen in all these big shows, where they kind of ease things, ease into the card a bit. So that was basic. It was simple, John. I went a star and a half on this one.
The what a contrast. Rebel was all tan, oiled, and jacked up, and Hack was not so much, pale, pasty, and fatted up. It was quite the contrast. And just like in last week, last episode, with I think it was the Taz match, where Rebel busts one great move like 10 seconds into the match, where the guy's head is hanging outside the ring and he does that leg drop.
Yes.
That's quite an impressive move. And it's like he can't wait to bust it out 10 seconds in. That's his one good move. But yeah, not much else. Hack just falls on him with his fat. I don't know if Hack's going to be worthy. Maybe you got to find some music for him next episode.
Yeah, I have to think of something here. Some guys just can't wait to bust, you know, John? They're just going to... Not everyone has everyone has the wrists of fury to edge for days.
Sometimes 30 seconds is all you need, Justin.
That's it.
So I actually like this more than typical Rock and Rebel Hack Myers shit. I went 1.75 stars on it, but there was one point in the match where Rebel reaches into his into his tights, and it looks like he was adjusting his balls or something. I don't know, but it was very obvious what he was doing. I was like, is he going for a weapon? That doesn't seem like him, but maybe he just had to scratch his balls or something. I don't know.
Maybe he had a testicular torsion.
He might, yes.
Do you know what that is? Have you experienced that?
No, I don't have any testicles.
John, have
so
you?
I haven't. No.
What was the term again?
Testicular torsion.
Hold on. Let me get my my WebMD up.
You may want to check it out. It's basically where your balls get twisted. Your balls get twisted around.
Your balls get like twisted around. Right?
Where the right one goes where the left one's supposed to be and vice versa.
Yep, they basically get tangled up. But we actually had Don and I were at Hard Rock Cafe. I'll never forget where we were. Hard Rock Cafe at Foxwoods. And we had this waitress. She was really cool. And I was trying to get Don to like float with her and give her his numbers like before he's married and met his girlfriend and everything. So, you know, we're fucking around. And she starts telling us a story about she was single. She had a son. And she told us a story about her son had testicular torsion and he had to go for like surgery to get them untangled. He left her his number, but I don't think she ever called. But anyway, that's where I first learned about that awful malady that I hope never have to experience.
Jenny, I'm sorry. I have to apologize. There's two. You're on a podcast with two men, and I have a penis or ball story myself. I have to share.
And ball stories. What are you talking about?
It must have been late '90s. I was very into bike riding. I switch exercises, and as you know, if you sit on the bike too long, certain things happen, like a numbness happens, so you have to stand up every so often. So one time, on an especially long ride, I guess I forgot to stand up, and. I noticed it was like dead down there. There was really like nothing. I was like, I had to pull off, and I was like, I had to like beat it with a hammer for like 10 minutes and to get some feeling back in. It was dead for the longest time. It was very frightening. Not that I have much use for it anyway, other than to urinate. That was a harrowing, frightening experience, and I never got on a bicycle again in my life.
Awful.
You had to beat it with a hammer.
I thought you were going to give me a good long ball Larry story, you know, maybe they got tangled up in the no-fly zone.
When it comes to that part of the body, it's never a good story. It's always going to be, it's a story about being numb for like 10 minutes.
We're off to a good start.
Anything else about this match, right? Jenny? Anything you got?
Nope.
No, Jenny, you were going to say something. I rudely interrupted with that.
No, literally. Like, I have like three notes, and one is like, what is Rebel doing with his balls? And, you know, I liked it better than I did most of their matches individually. So it was all right.
Out next is our good friend Tommy Cairo taking on not Stone Cold Chad Austin. Cairo ambles out. Sans Peaches going solo tonight. I guess that she's done with him maybe after he finished get his act kicked by Sandman. She left maybe.
She's got testicular torsion. She's staying at home.
Yeah.
What did Cairo do? Cairo strikes me as a guy, he doesn't have much game. He must have like gave her a Dutch oven on the first date.
What's a Dutch oven, Chad?
Oh my God. Justin, you want to?
Nope, all you, buddy. It's all you.
Jenny, you have to study your Urban Dictionary.
That's what you're here for my questions, for my life questions.
Would be after a romantic night of lovemaking and you're cuddling with your significant other when you put the covers over your head and you rip a few gassers in, that are especially noxious and you let her just waft in it for under the covers and you
if you need help, Jenny, I can use it in a sentence for you.
Okay.
At Ring of Honor in Philadelphia, D'Amato gave a Dutch oven to the entire ECW arena during the main event.
It's more when you force it under the covers. But that was basically that
sweat box we were in. You pretty much did.
Why don't you tell the whole story? I defended you guys. There was a bunch of jerks that were right in front of us being real obnoxious and loud, and they were smoking. They smelled very weedy, and it wasn't really good weed. They smelled like bad weed. So I had to counteract their bad weed smell with a smell even worse, with some bad jade smell. And I at least to shut them up, man.
What about you, Justin? You have any fart stories for us?
So Tommy Cairo ambles out, sans peaches. Chad Austin struts to the ring. He's acting cocky. He's big time in the fans. Now he's a big old heel. We get a bunch of stalling, so Cairo chucks Austin off a lockup. Cairo uses his power strikes early. It's a nice suplex and then a big military press slam. Full-on squash of farce. Cairo's is beating the piss out of Austin, taking his time and just battering him. Austin needs to post out a charge of flops to the floor. Cairo hit the back suplex, but Austin falls to the front of the rope, so he survives. Cairo gets a nice power slam as the abuse rolls on. Cairo goes up top, but comes up empty on a somersault dive, and Austin hits a top rope sunset flip for two. Austin rolls up Cairo, puts his feet on the top rope, and steals the win. And fuck, I hated that finish. It is so stupid. Mm. Austin cheating is fine, but God, so lame. I mean, Cairo just beat the shit out of him the whole match, and then you do that. Like, if you're going to do a banana peel finish, just do a better one than him putting his feet on the ropes, which is like one of the weakest looking, lamest, cheating finishers. I can't stand it. Have Cairo slip or whatever. Hit him with something, a weapon, knock him out. Anything is better than that. And I think Cairo just keeps looking like a clown. He like dominates this and gets rolled up and loses to this bum. He's gotten whipped by Sandman. He just is kind of going nowhere now. And this match really helped no one. Half a star, Johnny. I did not care for this one.
Yes, same. I didn't like it either. I mean, it's kind of fun watching Austin get his ass beat, but it's kind of soulless because it's Cairo. I just don't care. And to Austin's credit, he did have his feet on the top rope. So, it looked
stupider.
It looked kind of funnier, but still pretty stupid.
Yeah,
yes.
That's stupid.
I went half a star as well. About you, John?
Yes, I agree with all you guys say. Poor Cairo. The guy's all jacked, and he at least tries. He does a couple nice moves, but they don't do him any favors. They don't do him any favors. Yeah, they just pumped him out and make him look even worse than Sandman here. And Joey was a star of this match, though. He had a couple.
Yes.
He was a body shaming Chad Austin. He said something about he doesn't know what a solo flex is, which was a 90s exercise tool, kind of shaming his flabby body. And then he also made a reference to the Long Island trial, which was Mr. McMahon must have been going on trial at this time.
It might have been right out. Yeah, I guess it was like June, July. He was up there. Yeah, so you're right. What happens to your balls while you're doing that exercise, John? Anything?
Solar flex?
Yeah.
I never tried it. Yeah.
Cairo,
done with the stories.
You made a good point with Cairo, though, because that's kind of been his MO. Like, he's flashed pretty good offense here and there for a guy with his size. And I just think he's miscast. Like, it's almost like they're trying to make him like a local boy, blue collar steel worker kind of guy or something. You know what I mean? Like out in the fields, out in the mills, working his ass off, and then he comes here. But the problem is with his ugly face and like beer gut, like he would have just been better off as just like a bully heel. And he's got, but I guess he does have some face offense. So I don't know. This is a weird mix. Like he looks like a heel, he wrestles like a face, and he's booked like a jobber. So it's like he's just kind of going nowhere with everything he's got going on. It's just an odd, it's an odd package he's got. Well, so.
He wrestles like emotionless. Like it, there's just nothing. Like he already knew what was going to happen, and like he doesn't want to do it. Like it looks all just very forced and. Yeah, I wasn't.
He doesn't have peaches to inspire him.
Yeah, that's what he needs. It's definitely what he or a fucking cane.
Yeah, he needs a Sandman cane to the head to inspire.
Feeds off Tommy. All right, time for our next match, and it's a big one. It is for the ECW television title as our boy, our homie, Mikey Whipwreck. Defends his belt against the sexiest man in the world. Jason struts out, rubs his body, slithers into the ring. Jason gets flowers from fans as Mikey gingerly comes out to cheers. Some feeling out to start into a shoulder block by Jason, who's just looking fucking shredded here, by the way. He really got himself in shape for this little run. He is ripped. Joey puts over his body as well. I mean, even he's impressed by Jason's body. Jason keeps punching and kicking away. Mikey gets a cross body block for two. Mikey gets a flurry, and the crowd is loving it. He pours it on the floor, but Jason fends him off and slams him on the table, goes to the apron, puts Mikey through it with a leg drop. Jason's eating this up, acting as cocky as ever. He keeps it up in the ring, impressing Joey. Jason goes to a chin lock, cuts Mikey down with an elbow after releasing. Not sure what he released, but releasing. Jason shows off some nice offense here, taking his time, landing all shots. Jason keeps going for a chin lock, and Joey gets into some Jay Sully banter. Mikey gets a few flash near falls in the comeback and then plays dead in a fun spot, and he catches Jason with a small package for two. We get a small package roll-a-thon for both men, which the crowd is into as they're just kind of rolling around the ring, trading control of that. Jason takes back over, just chucks Mikey to the floor. Mikey comes back with a few chair shots but comes up empty on a big high cross body. Jason grabs a chair, but Mikey blocks him, and he accidentally bashes the ref in the head with it, and then he hits Jason with it. Mikey covers, and after seems a very slow count, he wins the match to a pop. I like this a lot. Mikey wins on his own without a fluke, and it's a big moment. So that was cool. He didn't need any help, any bullshit. The Pitbulls come out and beat the shit out of Mikey, and then they put Jason on top of him, and now the loopy ref counts, and it seems like Jason has won. So maybe Mikey didn't win on his own. Another ref comes out, and we find out officially that the bloody Jason is now our champion, has won the match and the TV title. I thought this was really fun. The crowd was into it. They worked up the heat and come back nicely. The finish was a little convoluted, but I like it because Mikey like finally wins a match on his own. And sadly, it's also the match where he loses the title. So it's like he finally overcomes that barrier, gets over the hump, and then it costs him. So Jason is champ, though, I thought should be fun. I mean, Mikey had to lose sometime, and I thought this is a good a way as any to do it. I've talked about it anyway over the last few episodes where I feel like you're kind of running out of ways to have him keep the title. So either he had to start getting good enough to win on his own, or he had to lose the belt. You couldn't keep having the heels, you know, pick him up at two or hit the ref and get DQ. Like you had to at some point shit or get off the pot with him. So he finally gets the win, loses the belt though in the process. 2.5 stars for me, John.
Yeah, I liked it too. Not only was it different that he didn't get the win, but also it wasn't just where he went out there and got his ass kicked. Mikey showed a lot of stuff. As a matter of fact, he went through like the whole wrestling school maneuver with the hip toss, the arm drag, all back to back. He showed off all the stuff, and the crowd was loving it. So Mikey got to show his stuff, and I agree. Jason looked tremendous. Very hot, tanned, jacked, not overly jacked, but you know, tanned and toned, perfect abs, everything, and he looked the part. But I blame like the editing and stuff, because at the end they didn't really like emphasize how Jason had won the belt. So if you think maybe they're doing a cliffhanger for the TV that the belt would be up in the air, because they kind of cut away quick. So I really wasn't convinced that like Jason had won it. And why would they? And they didn't really explain why the first count, why Mikey's pinfall didn't count.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, I guess too. This. I mean, if we remember back, like, I don't think this was on TV. So this was. They probably got to see him celebrate along in the arena, and then this was just, I think, just on tape later. So,
yeah. They taped it for sale. Yeah.
So we'll see how TV plays out if they focus on the reasoning behind it more. But again, yeah, for tape. But I'm with you. That's the one thing they don't really fully do, is explain why. I guess you're just supposed to assume that the ref was loopy and didn't realize what he was doing. that's all you really get. The Jason Mia Jack thing is funny to me, though, because he he's kind of got a Dodef look. And when he was there for a while, you know, he was just a jobber, you know, for 2 years or whatever. Yeah. And then he comes here and he gets pushed. But he's, I guess he's a little short. He's only 5'9", according to this. So, amazingly enough, he is only 56 right now.
Oh, wow.
So,
and Joey had some good gems. He's like, yeah, Jason's pretty cocky for a guy with 2 pinfalls in 8.5 years.
Wait, that can't be right. Actually, that's got to be wrong. He was born in 63. That's not 56. That's what?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, 56. Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah, he got, yeah, so he was really young here then, I guess. He was just shy of 30. And it's just, I guess I say that because as a guy, I guess he, I mean, he ends up wrestling for a while, like around the indies and stuff, but never really does much more. And just a guy with a look, and he was pretty entertaining, and he was young enough that I'm surprised he never really got like another shot somewhere else.
Yeah, he had the promo ability, definitely. Yeah.
Well, I went with 3 stars on this match. I thought it was funny in the beginning. It said a 1 hour time limit. So I'm like, Mike ain't going 1 hour with anybody, especially with Jason. But I was very pissed off by the ending. I popped so hard when Mikey finally won, and I had the same note that John did about he had all the wrestling school moves, but he did them well. Like he was hitting all his drop kicks and all his hip tosses, yeah. And he looked really good. Like, especially for Mikey, you have to like put it in context of what we've seen Mikey do. So, I was into this match like quite a bit. The crowd loves him. I loved the little the cradle reverses where they just rolled on the mat back and forth. I loved that. That was awesome. And really fucking pissed off when Jason won the belt. Like, just
in a good
not
way,
even
though,
gonna
or
lie.
Like
I was
upset.
I was upset. I was upset for sure. Because like I get what you're saying, like it makes sense. Like, but this could have been a big thing for Mikey and it could have elevated him, but he gets screwed over, and I don't like it because I'm in love with Mikey Whipwreck.
I know, but I feel like it's like a really good heat builder for Jason. Like to have him, like he's been such a prick through all this, and for him to be like, think of all the guys that have gone at Mikey and failed, right? Rebel, Pitbull, Sandman. Like, you know, we've seen a lot of big names take a shot at the title and they've lost. They blew it for themselves. And of all the people, Jason fucking steals the win. And it's like just it's basically telling the same story, right? I mean, you just kind of have this like little mopey guy, it's just a heel instead of a face, somehow becoming champion. But I think as it plays out, it's not a bad thing for Mikey, and it's a good thing for Jason. So we'll see how things continue to play for this, but I think it ends up being a good decision across the board.
Maybe if they had explained the ending a little bit better, I might be a little bit more on board with that. But like John said, it was like, what? Why the fuck did not the first one count? The ref looked... I mean, he crawled and did the 1-2-3, but he still did it. Like, I don't get it. I still don't.
Yeah, right. I don't get, because the same ref counts the second pinfall, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's
so
not
that's
a
confusing
ref.
Right. They should have just had another ref come
yes,
and say because Mikey used the chair. Yeah, you're right. They don't really fully explain it. It is what it is there, but ECW is the one thing we've seen. They've had some really good stories, some great promos, some good matches. The finishes have definitely been a weakness. And, you know, it's funny, John, because I think it's something I've noticed too, like with watching like 80s NWA and stuff. It tells you how much credit a guy like Pat Patterson deserves, who's like always been lauded as like a, you know, master of like wrestling finishes and ends of matches creatively. And a guy that was in the WWF all the time, you know, in the 80s and 90s, coming up with these finishers to matches. And like, I think if you look at these major promotions, the WWF far and away, now they have their own botched ones for sure, but in big match settings and stuff, whether it's TV or pay-per-view, their finishes were usually much more smooth and easier and straightforward to understand than some of these other ones that end up getting muddied or lost or anticlimactic. Do you agree with that? It's, you know, watching a lot of 80s and 90s stuff.
Especially on the pay-per-views and definitive ends of feuds, definitely. And as opposed, like I said, the NWA, that's where the what's the famous term known as?
The dusty finish. The dusty finish.
Yeah, there you go.
He only takes 30 seconds of that finish too, baby.
Fireball.
All right. Time for our next match, and it's a big one. It's a tag match that we've been hyping. The Pit Bulls taking on Taz and Jimmy Snuka, who have come together out of mutual respect, animalistic respect, on our last show, and or one of our last shows. And here we go. Snuka, of course, is looking for revenge on Jason's team, one of Jason's former charges and friend with the Pit Bulls. They have turned, and we go right to it as Snuka and Taz come out and attack the Pit Bulls, who had been out with Jason, of course, in that last match. We get all four brawling in the ring. Taz hits the first big shot on Pit Bull 2 with a belly-to-belly. Snuka hits a Superfly Splash on Pit Bull 2. Taz hits the T-Bone on Pit Bull 1, and they cover for the win. I am so torn on this because I was so disappointed. I was really looking forward to this match. I was hoping for like just a violent brawl with these guys throwing each other around and beating the shit out of each other. But it was a really cool moment. The crowd goes nuts for the finish, and Snuka and Taz celebrate like crazy. It feels kind of like a thank you moment for Snuka. I don't know if this is it for him, but it feels like a official passing of the torch. And it's a cool moment for Taz, who kind of gets that win over the Pit Bulls that he's been looking for. Just need a little backup to get there. So from a storytelling and moment perspective, I thought it was really well done. But for someone that was looking forward to seeing this match, I was kind of sad. So, Johnny, I went 1 star on this for the moment. Disappointed in the match, but I get why they did it the way they did. Do you agree, Jenny?
Jenny, I got
Hi,
your number.
I was on mute. Hi. 1 star. I went a 1/4 star because this was barely a match. And it was basically like a run-in from the previous match. And I don't know. I was on the fence about that whole Taz and Snuka team-up deal. But the splash looked really cool, and the crowd did love it. And I did like the celebration. But, it was just like whatever for me. I wasn't feeling it. What about you, John?
I don't like just dismissing the Pit Bulls like that. They just spent so much time. And the Pit Bulls are proving themselves. It would have been better if they did it against another team because the moment definitely was the sweet with the simultaneous pins.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like how they blew off the Pit Bulls.
For some reason, they don't seem to have a problem like beating the Pit Bulls. Like, they build them up like monsters. So we started with Pit Bull 1 a bunch. Like, they're really built up well and hyped as, you know, just vicious animals. And this is like not the first time we've seen Pit Bull 1 just kind of get smashed and beaten. Like, he's been getting beaten clean a bunch. And I don't know if they just think he's kind of bulletproof because of his look and the gimmick and all that. And like, a guy maybe doesn't give a fuck about wins and losses, just wants to kill you. So maybe they figure like it doesn't matter. But it's definitely not the first time we've seen Pitbull get done like this. I think maybe it'd been to Taz before in a singles match. Didn't he get over him too, like quick or something? He had the shit with Mikey. So he's definitely a guy they're not afraid to beat. So that part sadly didn't shock me. I was hoping for a little bit more, but the moment was pretty cool. And I get your point, John, another team, but also it kind of works even better because of the heat that's been baked in with Taz and the Pitbulls and Snuka and Jason, like, and all that. So, like, I kind of get why they just did it here, to just blow off all these feuds going at once. So it was more cathartic to have it be the Pit Bulls.
Yeah, and also kind of Jason kind of overshadows the Pit Bulls now because he's got a lot more shine.
Right.
Nobody outshines the Pit Bulls. Nobody. Another big match as we're really starting to hit our stacked part of the card. Mr. Hughes comes to the ring with Angel and Shane Douglas, who's got those skin-tight green shorts and bulky white sock combo on. Angel's still in her neck brace. Douglas cuts a brief promo. And then, as you heard a moment ago with that song, Paulie dangerously brings out 911 for this big Haas showdown that has really been built up well. A major test for 911, who really has just been beaten up on, I don't know, guys, Adam Cole size, some may say, for most of this, build-up. He's gotten screwed. He's attacked some referees like his Peter Winton in a Bruins game. But we are ready to go here, his first true one-on-one showdown. And the crowd seems into it. We get loud 911 chants from the crowd. They get some stalling, some last-second showmanship from both. We get a nose-to-nose showdown, which is cool. And then the iconic big stalemate shoulder block. And that devolves into a slugfest. Hughes eventually wins before grabbing a chokehold and a big choke slam. Gets a close near fall, which was wild to see 911 almost put down, like out of the gate like that. It was like reminded me of Hogan and Andre or WrestleMania 3, like a very homeless man's version, where Andre falls on Hogan and almost gets a three right out of the gate. And it's like, whoa, it like shocks you into, you know, you have to like recalibrate yourself and figure out where you are for a minute because, wow, that was almost the end. So that was crazy to see 9-1 almost eat it. 9-1 does come back. He fires out through some strikes. As Joey says, if you can make it in Philly, you can roll through Atlanta and Stanford. Hughes stays in control, but 9-1 blocks a sidewalk slam and hits a choke slam to the pop and the win. Shane Douglas comes in. He decks Paul after the match and then feeds Angel to 9-1-1, and he leaves. Angel slaps 9-1-1, but she eats a rough choke slam for her trouble as Paul does the Rick Rude hip swivel, and Joey makes jokes about Gloria Steinem and Hillary Clinton. Paul tells Shane to come get his dead, smelly fish out of the ring, and then 9-1-1 hits another hard choke slam on Angel. A fun power sprint, exactly what it should be. 9-1-1 needed to win. Couldn't have this go too long. Hughes gets a little bit of shine, even though he eats a pretty quick loss here. 9-1-1 definitely comes out looking stronger in the end than Hughes. And we also get a touch of Paul's women issues here as well with the way he talks about poor Angel. So I went star and a half, John, on this one. I thought it was a fun spectacle, not much of a match, but that was expected. And then the post-match was pretty good.
Between Hughes kept the shades on the whole match. 9-1-1 never hit him hard enough to knock the shades off. And then 9-1-1 kept his vest on the whole match. So little wardrobe malfunctions or issues there. And it was just all punches. And then Hughes hit the choke slam for 2.5. That was about it. The crowd was gave a nice slut chant. To Angel. And then friggin' Joey pretended, he's like, I don't understand what they're saying, Joey. Yeah, the male on female stuff is kind of hard. It doesn't age well. Choke slamming a female in a neck brace, and then the crowd just eating it up, and also makes Shane and Hughes look real shady because they were nowhere in sight. They ducked out when 9-1-1 gave the choke slams, and then right wing Joey got a shot in saying that he wished Hillary Rodham Clinton was here so 9-1-1 could choke slam the health bill. Ooh, awful.
Yeah, he is. It won't be his last conservative
politics and wrestling.
Hot take.
We don't want politics in wrestling. Just like we don't want politics in chat room. Oh, I should have been on mute.
Is Joey really right wing?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Interesting. Interesting career choice there, Joey Styles. I was like half a star on this. Not a huge 9-1-1 or Mr. Hughes fan, honestly. I did like that Hughes got the choke slam first on 9-1-1, so that was fun. And this might be odd, but I kind of like that Angel's in there taking the bumps like the boys. She took two choke slams with a fucking neck brace. So I don't know. I'm kind of into that. I mean, I guess it makes it. It's a girl thing, right? Like, cause like as a girl, if you're in there taking that shit, you know, it's like, it's some sort of credibility in my eyes. I mean, y'all might not see it that way, but I see it that way.
I think it probably works. What both of you say,
I
think works.
I don't like it because they didn't like build her up. Like we just saw in the last batch of episodes, they just threw her in there. They didn't really have no build up, and they haven't really shown her doing anything malicious. So it's just like, okay, here's this.
As long as he's beating her up with no provocation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what both of you are saying is right. Like at the time, it was kind of a cred thing. Like, oh, you know, here in ECW, the women are extreme too, and they take beating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this isn't the last time. It's far from it. But I think John's point probably stands a little bit as well, where, you know, it, with a modern lens, it maybe doesn't hold up as cleanly as it did back in the day. So I think both cuts of it are probably accurate in this case. But yeah, Angel, you know, we'll see other times that happens, and it's probably a little bit more earned than what Angel had coming here. And then to get laid out by 9-1-1 and then have Paul make stinky vagina jokes about you is probably a little,
yeah.
You know, a little.
I'm hoping that
wound.
She, you know, turns that around a little bit on Paulie and maybe gets a little bit of her own in. So we'll see.
Yeah, I want to back on that. That might be it, I think. So anyway. But we'll see where 9-1-1 goes from here. So, I mean, he's kind of vanquished the one guy that physically imposing wise can, you know, stand up to him right now in ECW. Everyone else, there's guys that are crazy and violent and everything else, but as far as size-wise, there's not really anyone else on the roster right now that can match with 911. So Hughes has been vanquished. We'll see if anyone else steps to the plate or if he just kind of goes back to terrorizing everyone for Paul. Good luck getting this out of your head. Give me my money. All right, another match with a hot build as the Sandman takes on Tommy Dreamer. Sandman and Woman have really nailed down the entrance. Just this slow walk to the ring. They stop to mock the fans. They smoke a cigarette. Woman's giving a hand job to the cane. Joey calls him. Joey calls Sandman the model of health and fitness, which I found funny.
Pure sex.
So, I mean, it was a really good entrance. I thought it was really well done. Tommy sneaks in from under the ring and just wrecks Sandman with a cane and then goes at Woman. He kisses her. Woman tries to swat at him. He takes more whacks at the bloody Sandman. Dreamer smacks the ref. He's battering Sandman with a cane. Announcer Bob Ortiz says the ref has disqualified Sandman, and then he corrects himself and says Tommy's disqualified. Dreamer is out of his mind. He canes the announcer. He canes Sandman over and over and over. Joey says instead of poor Bob Ortiz, he should have caned Michael Buffer and Howard Finkel instead. Dreamer has changed so much since his early days when he was kind of a nice guy. Dreamer just keeps going and going and finally struts off to a mix of cheers and boos, which surprised me a little bit. Sandman's laid out. Woman smokes a cigarette standing over him and then puts a cigarette in Sandman's mouth and he wakes up when she does it. That was funny. Interesting way to go with this is Dreamer has really snapped. So, like the nice guy, the young up-and-comer, ever since Jimmy Snuka shattered his insides with that splash, he has really kind of gone over the deep edge and it's been played out here. Sandman gets left lying again like he often did. Taking losses, but he would stand tall, but not tonight. This is more angle of the match. I didn't go with the grade, but I thought it was a really well done segment, and it really is maybe, you know, the end of the first act of what is going to be a really good feud between these two guys, and important feud in some ways. So we'll see where things go, but I really dug this whole segment, Jenny.
I didn't grade it either, but I did like it. I did like it, but I was disappointed because I did want to see him wrestle, you know? I was really curious about if it would just be like another caning gimmick or if they would actually wrestle. Confused about Tommy. He just seems like super ragey and horned up. So I don't know what the deal is with him. Unsure about the kissing spot here with a woman. I like the previous one. This one was a little bit more awkward, I think. Maybe more aggressive than the other one. I don't know. She didn't seem to enjoy it as much as she did the other one. It put her on the fucking mat.
Well, yeah, you have to wonder, too, are they going to the well, you know, too much with it? Like, are they going to keep...
Right. We're not already overdone with the canes, so, right. You know.
And we mentioned earlier, too, with the loss, with the... picking guys up at two, like the one thing they're falling into is definitely a path of tropes. Like we are seeing a lot of consistent plot points play out across feuds and wrestlers in this promotion. The canes, like you said, this stuff. And I don't know how much of it has to do with like them just catering to local audiences or different audiences or trying to get maybe understanding, not everyone maybe watching every episode. Yeah. There may have been business reasons for it, but watching it now, you see just how much they were leaning on some of the same gimmicks over and over.
Sandman takes a brutal caning too. Like most of the hits were to his fucking face and it looks rough, but I did love when she revived him with the cigarette. That was amazing. It made it all worthwhile.
Their character stuff is just like nails right now. I mean, they are great together. It's been a great move for Woman to go with Sandman. I know you loved Kevin Sullivan, Jenny, but, her with Sandman has been phenomenal for both of them. It's taken Sandman to the next level. The promo work and her kind of being the dom and, you know, him kind of being whipped, but also being a tough guy. Like just all of it is just been really, really good. Just this, you know, it's a couple you expect. You walk into like a local, you know, biker bar and, you know, kind of holding court in the back or whatever. Just the woman that's kind of with all the guys and then the degenerate Sandman playing pool, smoking a cigarette. You know, it's just kind of just what you would expect these two to be right now.
Like D'Amato and one of us whores.
Who is that? You're close. You're getting there. Even Kevin Kelly, Kevin Kelly took a while to get it right.
Yeah, you're right. Ooh. I'm working on it.
But yeah, that's another thing that doesn't age well, though. The guy forcing a kiss on another woman, and I disagree with you, though. It looked like for a couple seconds that woman was into it. She was kind of mesmerized by it. But
yeah, until he forced her to the mat with it. Yeah. Like, Jesus Christ.
I don't know if that move ever works, where you just grab a woman and, you know, and force a kiss on her. JT, would you want to chime in on that one?
Stop short. That's my move.
And Joey was great at the end when woman revived Sandman with the cigarette, saying, "Ah, who needs first aid?" And Sandman came up from the dead with that cigarette. But it was good. It was good that they mixed it up, because we saw like in the last batch of episodes where Sandman always looking strong, like caning 15 guys, and here he finally takes a whooping with his own cane. So it was good to mix it up and make Dreamer look strong.
Yeah, you know, we got a lot of good acts in ECW right now, but I think Sandman and Woman are the best of the bunch. Like, I think they are literally the best characters we have right now in ECW. We got some really good ones, we got some good stuff going on across the board, but I'd put them at the top of the power rankings.
Yeah, they're tremendous.
All right, so with that all said, why don't we go ahead, take a little break ski, when we come back, we got three big matches remaining, and then we'll wrap up the show.
All righty then.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Alright, Place to Be Nation, we are back here on Extreme Three-Way Dance, episode number 13, looking at Hardcore Heaven, 1994, which I cannot believe is already 25 years old. Can't believe it's already been 25 years since the show, but we have existed that many years since. Let's take a look what's going on in the world of Place to Be Nation. On this very here feed, Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, Place to Be Podcast episode 537, me, Scott, Peter Winston took a look at the 223.90 main event, and then in episode 538, me, Scott, and Drew Wardlaw looked at the March 1990 Madison Square Garden house show as we are rapidly approaching WrestleMania 6. So, lots to look forward to there. In the newest You Don't Know Billy Jack, Drew and Jordan took a look at the heavy classic that is Akira Hokuto versus Shinobu Kandori from April of 1993. Episode number 2, With This Ring, Ryan and Cindy continue going over their GWWE list with a look at Bloodbaths. New main event reaction special, Scott and Dr. G took a break from Shovel in the Driveway to break down the NWA Into the Fire pay-per-view from Atlanta last weekend. Well-regarded show. Body Press Your Luck, episode 2. Ryan Everett was on to defend his title against Ed Bennett and Scott Shiflett. And that show had a romp through the legendary Death Valley Driver message board sleaze thread. Of course, Jordan Duncan and myself and Andy Atherton were on that ship. And Chris Zellner and Devin Hales were back to bring you a decade-capping review from 2019 TLC from Indianapolis on this month's PTBN WWE pay-per-view reaction show. And finally, I was back with Chad Campbell for our all-new Wrestling Warzone, where we looked at the very disappointing Super Brawl 6. We had a lot of hope and hype coming in, but you can hear our thoughts on how that all played out with maybe one of the worst pay-per-view matches, main events of all time. To cap that off, that was a debate we have during that show. Be sure to check out the pod feed as well, littered with great content. Hard traveling shows like the Hard Traveling Fanboys, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, the Aaron Pop, Laughing Theater, DC4U, Marvel Age, Your Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, and so much more. Subscribe today, and while you're at it, if you're in Apple Podcasts or any of the other podcast chips, podcast options, podcast hubs,
catchers,
apps. Subscribe to the Jenny Position, Jenny. You want to talk about that?
The Jenny Position is where you can find Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Driving, Telling Stories, Journey Through Infinity, and whatever the fuck else I can come up with. We have a new Talk and Pop this week. It was really, really good. We did our Christmas episode called Holiday Happy Hours Part 2. We had stories. We had questions. It was a blast. I will have a new Geek and Sassy tomorrow. Also Christmas themed. It's a pretty racy one, not safe for work, in which Miranda and I review a Chuck Tingle novel called Pounded in the Ass by the Holiday Manifestation of Gift Giving, or some bullshit like that. So yeah, it's really fun, and there's a lot of dirty talk on that one. I'm not sure if we're gonna lose all of our listeners or gain like a million listeners. Just let me know. Also, there's a new Journey Through Infinity with a lot less pounding in the ass, where we talk about Incredible Hulk from the MCU, continuing that journey.
Yeah, and I definitely called it Journey to Infinity, I think, on PTB, so I fucked up in my own show, but it is Journey Through Infinity, and it is a really good show. You can hear Scott Criscolo melt down over the shitty Hulk movie, and it's a very entertaining discussion, so check that out. Also entertaining is the Greatest Sitcom of All Time tournament going on right now. It's raging on our social media pages on Facebook. You can just search Greatest Sitcom of All Time or follow us on Twitter, place number 2B Nation, and the polls will be there right for you, delivered each and every day, usually around between like noon and 2 Eastern. The polls will go up. Get your votes in. We are in round one. And Jennifer, I believe we're going to do some live voting. A little break in kayfabe, I guess. It's not airing the night we're recording, so these polls will be closed by the time you hear it. But you can hear what we thought on these specific polls, and you can shit on us if you're not happy.
I'm sure everyone will agree with all of our choices. There's no discourse to be had about any of these tournaments that we ever have, so nobody talks about it incessantly. For Tropicana region, round one, number 6, the Jeffersons versus number 59, Archie Bunker's Place. Some unfortunate pairings there, but I went with the Jeffersons.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a lamb one.
You're right.
Yeah, that's easy peasy. Archie Bunker's Place wasn't bad, but no match for the Jeffersons or the All in the Family, the original show it came from.
Right now, that is winning 91-9 on 9% on Twitter. So, number 27, Gilligan's Island versus number 38, Alice. Gilligan's Island. Pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough one. Alice was real good. You ever watched it? Flo, Kiss My Grits. She was like a sassy southern waitress right up your alley, Jenny.
Did you vote for Alice?
Not really. I had to go with
See?
So if you didn't vote for her, was she impeached?
Oh, come on. I think Ginger and Mary, and that's the that's the classic debate amongst horny virgins. Who would you rather do, Ginger or Marianne? You know, Ginger's like the sexy starlet actress, and Marianne's kind of like the down home sweet southern girl, a little more low key hot. So that's a big debate amongst
which one do you fall for?
I'm more of a Ginger. more of the buxom, ostentatious hooer.
What about you, Justin?
I am into girls named Ginger. I'd have to really think it over. I'll go Ginger. I trust Damano's take.
Oh, no, that's the worst thing you could do. Just trust my take.
Number 22, Welcome Back Cotter versus number 43, Chico and the Man. I don't give a fuck, so I voted for Welcome Back Cotter.
Jenny, come on. John Travolta was in Welcome Back Cotter. You have to give a fuck.
Welcome These are back all before my time, babe.
Yeah, we know. Welcome Back Cotter solely for the reason that it led to that song by Mace, the Welcome Back song. that was the best part of it.
There's a lot better than that. I'm not going to waste time in educating you two on classic shows. But Vinnie Barbarino, Horseshack. Moving on.
This has the greatest rap line of all time. Living the Vida without the Loca.
Loca, yeah.
It's an all-timer. Mm.
Some guys are living the Vida with the Broca.
Number 11, The Mary Tyler Moore Show versus number 54, The Donna Reed Show. Mary Tyler Moore, I suppose.
Yes, MTM all the way.
Yeah, I mean, that's another way. Plus, you know, she just flirted with Sean Mooney at WrestleMania 6, so it's another win.
Donna Reed's even before my time.
Fuck, they had TV before your
time. Ah, yeah, there you go. Maybe he's a few games.
No, you right, guys, don't let me in, John. I haven't said a word.
All right. Not yet.
I haven't said a word. I'm not age shaming you for knowing these old shows. Don't forget to check out PlayStation.com each and every day. We have new voices, fresh takes, articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, The Week in WWE with John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion, plus a veteran column like Glenn Butler's Weekly Walk Around the Web. If you do an online shopping at Amazon.com, click on our banner, the right-hand side of PlayStation.com, or go to PlayStation.com/Amazon. Takes you right there to do some shopping and gives a little kickback to PCBN. While you're on Amazon, check out the new book by longtime PCBN fan Adrian Cotton, AWO Big Time Players Episode 1, The Beginning of Change. Final information on our GWWE pay-per-view TV match ever project. Visit our social media pages. Ballots are open and the ballot link is available on the Facebook group page. Ballots are due December 31st, 2019 at 11:59 p.m. local time. That leaves you just about a little over... what, 2 weeks or so? Not even. Just under 2 weeks to get your ballot in. We've already gotten some. We look forward to, I know a bunch usually pour in at the deadline, so be sure to get those in. And rumors are swirling. You don't even have to call the WCW hotline for this one. I'll give you the scoop right here of a brand new, returning, no holds barred with me and Aaron going through our list. So stay tuned for that. It's a hot scoop. A hot scoop from good old JT right here.
Yep, make sure you hold your breath for that one.
It's been a while since we heard from the Great White North.
Yeah. Something like that. All right, big tag team title match here as the Public Enemy are out with their titles defending against the Bad Breed who have been pushed hard and fast into the slot. Nothing. All right. We're reminded that if a team is knocked out for a 10 count, the other team can use a baseball bat. And it's falls count anywhere. I thought these are cool steps to spice things up. So, again, reiterate, falls count anywhere. And the first team to knock someone out for 10 then gets to utilize a baseball bat for the rest of the match. Joey says, Public Enemy are the nastiest boys to hold the tag titles. And the pair that calls themselves nasty would never show up in Philly. So, a clear shot at the WCW tag team, the Nasty Boys. Down in Atlanta. So, as usual, Joey taking shots. We get a bunch of stalling. Public Enemy talk shit to the crowd. They're chanting jailbirds at them. Public Enemy walk out. Bad Breed talk shit to get them back. Public Enemy eventually come back and kick the ref in the balls for fun, which was funny. We get even more stalling. Rock and Ian finally get going. Rock controlling until he comes off the rope and eats a drop kick. Ian dumps him outside. He bumps all the way into the crowd. Grunge helps him, but they get slammed by an Ian Cannonball over the top. Ian almost broke his back on that spot. It was gross. Rock tries to walk the barricade, but Ian kicks it and crotches himself. The teams keep brawling outside, and chairs get involved as things just spiral out of control. Back inside, Ian smashes Rock with an open chair shot. Rock then takes a springboard sit-down arm drag, but it gets blocked. Rock clotheslines Ian over the top and goes with him. Rock grabs a frying pan and smashes Ian in the head with it. Axel gets a tag. We reset with him and Rocco. Axel lands some offense, but a bloody Grunge tags in. Grunge works over Axel. We get some double teams, some near falls. Axel escapes and tags Ian, who lands a dropkick on Rock. Public Enemy comes in and gets a six count on Ian. Axel comes in and we get some back and forth until Ian comes back out with a chair. The Bad Breed hit the Doomsday Device and get the 10 count and are awarded the baseball bats. Axel batters Grunge with the bat as Ian and Rock brawl outside. The announcer says there must be a pin for this match to end, and it's not over. Rock and Ian spill into the crowd as a real bloody Grunge smashes Axel with the bat and then hits him with it off the top. In the crowd, Rock hits a splash off the scaffolding. That gets a big pop. Grunge and Axel go to the crowd as well. All four are swinging chairs and walk fighting through the fans. They're battling all throughout there. The crowd is just going like insane for all this because they're out there battling. We go into the nest as Joey Styles clears out. Rock massacres Ian with a chair and then chokes him with a rope and yanks him off the nest in a nasty spot. Rock covers, but the ref isn't there to count. Grunge and Axel are both soaked in blood and brawling around ringside. Grunge hits a DDT on the floor, and Rock bashes him with a hard wooden stool. Grunge hits an inverted DDT. Rock hits the somersault splash for the win and the pop. That was a wild, bloody mess of a brawl. Lots of plunder, vicious weapon shots. A true ECW match that the crowd loved, and that's what really made Public Enemy famous. The Bad Breed left it all out there as challengers. Public Enemy continues to build their legacy as Joey shits on Pretty Wonderful, another WCW tag team. Good classic brawl here. I went 3.25. I really, really dug this. And Bad Breed, it really stepped up a level in my eyes in this match. And, you know, as we talk about Rock in this match, DeMarta, what do you think of this match with the Public Enemy?
This is a vintage ECW. Big fuckfest. Bats and bats, hats, everything. At the beginning with Rocco attacked the straw hat man. did you catch that part?
I did.
Yeah, and then they must have gave him a new hat because I saw it towards the end of the match. It looked like he had a new hat, but it looked like Rocco really went at him. The straw man was down for a while. That was crazy because at the end it was you kind of thought like the Public Enemy were like the faces because they got a big face pop. But wild brawl, and yeah, I love Joey's pretty wonderful chime. And he said, "Yeah, pretty wonderful, but pretty stupid if they got in with a Public Enemy." But great overall.
It was great overall. I went 3.25 on it as well. I knew that I liked these Bad Breed fuckers because they're like perfectly matched for Public Enemy. They're like basically the same. You know what I mean? Like maybe not as crazy, but still their level of crazy. So you can brawl in the crowd. You can have the baseball bats and, you know, they're all just really good at everything that they're doing. And I was really glad to see the crowd brawling again and the blood again. And instead of tables, ladders and chairs, you had tables, steps and chairs because they kept grabbing those wooden steps and beating each other with them, which
and
I was
bats.
Enjoying.
Tables, and bats. Tables, bats and chairs. Yeah.
Did you like the steps as part of it? Like I thought it was well done, those steps.
I did.
Yeah, sometimes
yeah,
you get
really
multiple steps like that and you feel like it maybe is too much, but I didn't think so.
Yeah, that's unique. But
No, it's good. It's good for this because it's all wild and insane. And I love it when they go near the eagle's nest.
The only thing with the bats, though, it was tough. Especially the way the Breed was using the bats, like it doesn't look as strong when they try to choke them with the bat, or when they use the small end of the bat, and it doesn't look as devastating. But then again, if you really use a bat the way it's supposed to, that's kind of hard to kayfabe that.
That's true. I really like when they go near the eagle's nest and you know, Joey gets real nervous.
Out. Yeah,
yeah, I really love that. It's awesome to listen to. Great stuff, though. I love this match. Make no money, man, without the coca. Living La Vida without the loca.
That's a broker.
What did you guys think of Bad Breed in this? Like, did they step
they
up
amazing.
A level for you?
Yeah. And they were already on the rise for me, but yeah, this just cemented it.
I mean, I didn't know what to expect, you know, coming in, because they've been pretty good on TV. I guess we did see that one good match with them, but I remember, like, leading into this, I was kind of thinking, like, oh, we're going back to them. Like, I don't know, it just felt like they were using them to fill in because they didn't have another team for this month, but they ended up, you know, that wasn't the case. They ended up being pretty good.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's great.
All right, our favorite Arabian.
Fuck, that was well.
Sorry. Our favorite Arabian, Sabu, is out for another dream match on paper. A lot of hype for his entrance and this match. The Arabic music is blaring. He sprints down the aisle with Paulie dangerously behind him. Sabu dives in at Too Cold Scorpio, his opponent tonight. We get some quick back and forth right out of the gate, feeling out slowly to get going. Scorp works the arm. Sabu comes and fights through and kicks away before missing a slingshot leg drop to bring us to a reset. Scorpio works a side headlock, and that brings us to a nice series of dodges by both until Scorpio kicks Sabu to the floor. Scorpio meets him out there with a leaping fist. Back inside, Sabu tries a sunset flip to the floor, but Sabu hangs on. He crashes and burns. Scorpio hits a baseball slide and flies into Sabu with a plancha. Back inside, Scorp hits a slingshot splash for two as Joey says a win here would make Scorpio an instant contender for Shane Douglas. Scorpio hooks a surfboard submission for a moment, hits a sick inverted tombstone, which is just ugly. Scorpio slams Sabu with a sweet standing 1.5 gainer into a leg drop for two. Scorpio eats knees on a splash. Sabu hits a slingshot backflip splash for two, and then a slingshot leg drop for two as business is picking up. Paulie rallies the crowd for Sabu as a reset. He gets the slowest Frankensteiner ever, but Scorpio comes back with a powerbomb for two. Scorpio tries a flying forearm, whiffs and crashes. Sabu sets up a chair in the ring, hits a springboard moonsault to the floor. Sabu stands up a table and knocks Scorpio against it and then flies out of the ring and puts him through the table in a crazy spot. The brawl outside with Scorpio getting whipped into the fans, but he fights his way to the ring as Joey talks about how proud they are to have him in ECW. Sabu puts Scorpio in an open chair on the floor, flies from the ring with a somersault senton, but Scorpio moves, and Sabu flies into the chair and then into the railing, which was nuts. Scorpio batters Sabu with a chair and heads back inside. Scorpio tries a tombstone on the chair, but reverses it and crushes Scorpio with one instead, and that only gets two as Scorpio gets his foot on the rope, which, that move does look bad. Sabu whiffs on a moonsault. Scorpio snaps off a back suplex and then a slingshot 450 splash for two. Scorpio slams Sabu and goes up top, hits his twisting leg drop, only to get two again. Scorpio misses a moonsault and recovers and then sets up for a superplex, which Sabu blocks with a shove. Sabu hits a somersault senton that knocks Scorpio to the floor. Joey says this is the hardest core night in ECW history. Sabu pile drives Scorpio on the floor, puts him on a table, and hits a somersault splash through him. 911 puts both men inside. Sabu gets a close two count. They trade blows, and Scorpio hits a float over DDT. Sabu knocks Scorp down. Paul holds a chair over his face, and Sabu drops the leg for the win. A really good finish, I thought, as Paulie and 911 pay dividends for Sabu yet again. Scorpio goes toe-to-toe the whole way and felt like a star in this match. A lot of big spots after big spots with both guys emptying the tank. Had a slower pace, but was filled with large bombs just littered throughout the match. Both guys showed up. They stood out. Successful dream match for the company. We're getting lots of these with Sabu. And I like that they're really harping about how big it is to get Scorpio. Joey's proud of him. Like, all this stuff. Because, you know, he was well-regarded in WCW, but he was never, like, a star there. So they're doing, A, they're showcasing a guy that deserves to be showcased, and B, like, making him a big deal so folks understand what a big get this is for them. So, Jenny, I really like this. I went 3.5. I thought it was well done.
I really liked it, too. I went 3.25. I went 3.75. God damn it. I almost went 4 stars, but I don't know what held me back. I don't know what it was, but Sabu looking really good in blue and yellow and my most favorite dressed guy, except for the surfer guy. but yeah, I really love this match. Too Cold just looked amazing. Like, he was like, Sabu, who? Like, and just matched him move for move. And was really aggressive with him. And stood up to a lot of his offense, which we haven't seen a lot of from a Sabu match. But damn, Sabu is just like freaking. He is just like unearthly creature. Like, I don't understand him. Like, I don't understand him as a person, because it was just an amazing exhibition of all of his talents, and Too Cold just standing up to him and barely losing to him, and only losing because of the interference with 911 and Pauly. But I really, really, really like this match. What do you think, John?
To your point about Scorpio, he's so opposite of pretty much like everybody they have like pushed they have to camouflage their flaws, and Scorpio they could just throw out there, and just because he's a great wrestler, great moves, and they don't have to do all these crazy chairs and all the stuff that they use with the other guys who are limited. With Scorpio, they could just put him out there with a great match. And this is just one high spot after another. And that Sabu dive outside on the table against the rail, that was
amazing.
That was a highlight for me. And they keep Scorpio strong because Sabu needed 911's distraction and Paulie with the chair. And there was a lot of mishigash to get the Scorpio pinned. So, good look.
Also, Scorpio is pretty huge, but he moves so quickly and looks so light, you know, if that makes sense. Like, well, super muscly.
He's not that huge, but quick. he's a little beefy. Yeah, he's kind of beefy. Yeah.
He's packing, too.
I'm sure he is.
Yes, I agree with everything you guys just said. So I don't think that much more needs to be said. But Scorpio with an impressive showing. And just to your point earlier, Jenny, about Sabu, it does seem like he's an alien from another planet or something. Like, just comes down and just.
Like, he's not a real person. Right. Like, I'm convinced at this point he's some sort of government experiment. I don't know.
He's got kind of this weird ass body and. Yeah. Just everything about him, you know.
He's just relentless. Like, he doesn't stop. Like, he just keeps getting the fuck up through tables, it doesn't matter. Like, he just keeps going. It's amazing to watch.
It's the ball of energy.
Force of nature. Right about now, the Funk Soul
Brother. Check it out now, the Funk Soul Brother. Right about main event time, as Terry Funk, another dream match, takes on Cactus Jack. The crowd is really fired up to give Funk a huge pop. Jack gets a hot welcome as well. We're ready to roll for what really feels like a big time epic, and is being done here in this little tiny arena in Philadelphia for ECW. Cactus grabs the mic, says we've had enough violence, and he's come to appreciate family entertainment. These fans deserve a scientific match, and they're the ones to give it to them. The fans don't like that. Cactus says ECW is the first company to let them go head-to-head like they should, and he will kick Funk's ass. Funk chuckles and says Cactus has always been a dreamer, and then we get going. Cactus lands some shots early. Funk returns a favor. We get a Turner sucks chant. We head outside where Funk gets the weapons and using that to pick things up. Funk slinks Cactus into the crowd, smacks him with a chair. Cactus breaks a sleeper and then dives over the rail with a somersault bomb. Back in the ring, Cactus hits a bulldog but misses the Cactus clothesline, ends up tangled in the ropes. Joey reminds us this is how Jack lost his ear, as Funk pounds him free. Things spill outside again. They slug back and forth until Funk shoves Cactus into two posts. Public Enemy shows up and attacks Funk to booze, and that pisses off Joey. Cactus is bleeding as Public Enemy beats down Funk, leveling him with DDTs and trying to get Cactus to cover. Jack refuses to take the help, so Public Enemy attack him, shove him onto Funk, but Cactus won't stay there. Public Enemy takes out the ref and keep on the attack. They shove Cactus on top again. Grunge lays on top of him. Rock counts the fall, and they raise Jack's hand and then wipes him out. Public Enemy leaves. Funk and Cactus are pissed off. They start slamming things around. They take pieces of the table and storm off. Joey wraps up the home video, but before that can really end, all four come busting through the curtain and start brawling again, breaking out all the weapons as well. Funk pile drives Rock in a frying pan, and then Funk covers both as Cactus counts the fall. Cactus and Funk call for a chair, and then one of the most iconic ECW moments of all time. All of the fans start throwing chairs in the ring. They bury Public Enemy and Funk. Jack hits the floor. They're just literally laying in this deluge of chairs, just hundreds of chairs just piling on top of them in the ring. an insane wild team. The announcer is Barbatiz is begging them to stop, but no one cares. Please stop throwing chairs. An all-time moment. Public Enemy eventually digs out. They cut a promo and they warn for payback. So a lot to unpack here. I thought this started really, really good. It was building nicely, and like just when you're getting into it as a match, Public Enemy comes out and ruins it. And I was so pissed. I'm all for them keeping the feud going with Public Enemy and Funk. Like, that's been burning. We got more going on there, and you want to build heat. But this was such a cop-out finish and a bad decision. Like, it was clear maybe Cactus wasn't going to lose because he's still with WCW, and maybe they don't want to have Funk take another loss. But I don't know. The crowd just wasn't into it. They chanted bullshit. And even if you wanted to do this finish, give us more of the match. Like, it was just getting going. Make it feel like both guys are dead and out and can't go anymore, and then maybe Public Enemy comes out. Like, as is, it just felt like we didn't even get the match, let alone a shit finish. The post-match helped, and we get the all-time moment, but, you know, you can't keep going to the well to have a shitty finish and then a wild brawl to kind of save it at the end. The chair hurricane at the end helps. It's an iconic moment, but the match was definitely not as great as I had hoped. So I went 2 stars, John.
Yeah, I was disappointed too for a lot of the same reasons. And it goes back, I guess that's pretty much going to be the theme of the show is the difference in the book and, you know, setting us up. But, you know, a main event like that, you can't have a shit finish like that. But they were saved. I don't know if they planned it, but they were saved by one of the most iconic moments you'll ever see in any promotion with the chairs flying into the ring. So I don't know if they planned that or that was just spontaneous with the crowd.
It seems spontaneous to me. And I think low key though, when Ortiz was saying stop, they were doing it so they would keep continuing. Like, I think they were, yeah. I think they knew what a cool moment it was. So by him saying, please stop. He knew they'd keep going. You know what I mean?
So with that, you forget about the shitty finish because that ending is just epic. And I love where it's kind of like the Buried Alive match where a grunge just comes up from underneath all the chairs, like a graveyard of chairs. And he comes up and he pops up. And then when Public Enemies are yelling at him and they're trying to stand up and they keep slipping, they can't even get their footing because they're slipping on all the chairs.
That had to be so scary, man. Laying under those chairs. Those that were piling in. I mean,
oh yeah. Yeah, but they held it for a few seconds, and then finally they rose above it. But yeah, so many epic shots. Go, Jenny.
I went 2 stars on it, too. I've never been, like, out of a match and then back into the match as quickly as that. Because, like, when they started teaming up, I was like, I don't want this. Like, just, you know, don't go after a Public Enemy. And then they did. I was like, well, fuck all this shit. And then they bring them back, and I'm like, okay, that's okay, I guess. And then when all the chairs started pouring in, I was like, oh, okay, I see what we're doing here. And then I as they kept pouring in, even Funk and Cactus Jack looked scared. Like, holy shit, we're about to get hit by all these chairs. It was something else. And I'm so glad that nobody listened to the guy. I was like, stop throwing chairs in, do not throw chairs. And they just said fuck you and kept throwing them. It was amazing. But it didn't, it, like y'all said, it didn't really save the whole match, because this was, I was kind of looking forward to this, like, it's Cactus Jack, right? But ultimately kind of disappointing for the main event.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to continue the, you know, the running story of, like, Funk finding partners to battle Public Enemy. He did it with Arn, and that went south. So it's like, I get that he's like, but dude, started on TV or lately, just give us more of this match. Like, this whole thing goes different if we get 10 more minutes of the match, and then even if it's the same finish, I just feel like we got robbed of the actual match. Like, we didn't get to see it.
Yeah.
And maybe there's political reasons, maybe not, but I wanted just more of the actual match. Like, if we go 15-20 and you're kind of like wiped, and it's like, if it goes like Cactus Sabu or, yeah, the finish is shaky, but at least we got like a really good match. Like, we didn't even get that. It's a tease. It just starts going and then just ends, you know? So that was definitely disappointing. And, but the end, the iconic moment at the end definitely helps make up for it as we wrap things up. So why don't we go ahead and get to our awards to close things out. Match of the night for me was Sabu and Scorpio.
Me too.
Yep.
Okay. Worst match easily for me was Tommy Cairo and Chad Austin.
I went Pitbulls.
yeah, but that was still... God, I hate you.
Sorry.
That was still a great moment. It was been a... Cairo Austin was pure slop with no point. You're a slave to star ratings, like some nerd in your mom's basement.
Whatever.
Yeah. Gotta go, Cairo.
Thank you. Thank you, John. All right, best moment. I got a few best moments. Taz and Snuka's double pin was a great moment, which can no way could be the worst match of the night. Sammy and Woman's entrance, and then the cigarette CPR. I really liked Cactus's pre-match promo. I thought that was really well done. And then the chair barrage at the end.
Yeah, chairs flying in. Great. Cigarette CPR.
Chairs all the way.
All right, I got a few most 90s here. Shane's Douglas's thick white socks and tight green short combo. 911 beating up a woman, and then Dreamer forcing woman to kiss him.
How is 911 beating up a woman 90s?
Because it was more accepted in the 90s. Like 90s
in
wrestling.
In the 90s, scene. It was?
90s wrestling, it was, like, absolutely.
Also, every other decade prior to that. But okay.
Yeah, but not as much in wrestling. You didn't see it, like, on a mainstream.
Okay, I had a couple. They were in the Public Enemy match, when they were in the crowd, there was one guy, he had a disposable camera and he was taking pictures, and I was just watching him take pictures and then wind it back up, take a picture and then wind it back up. And then also in that crowd, somebody was wearing a Scream mask. So I popped for the Scream mask.
Can you imagine that the camera guy? Can you imagine his dick pic game in the 90s?
I know. Got to be rough trying to get that right. You know, angles and whatnot. Mm.
I'm going with Joey's steroid trial reference.
That was a good one, too. Yeah. All right, stock rising. I went with Jason, Sabu, Scorpio, and Cactus Jack. And I guess a shout out as well to the Bad Breed.
Yes.
Dreamer.
Dreamer, too. Yeah, that was really good. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of strong showings tonight.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, Bad Breed. Scorpio for sure. Dreamer. Yeah. That sounds good.
Stock falling. The poor Rocket Rebel. Tommy Cairo and his gut and missing teeth. And my poor Pitbulls.
Yep, agreed.
Poor Cairo. Lost without peaches, and he was lost with her too.
All right, final grade. You know, there was a lot of good in here, but it wasn't our best show that we've seen. Some of the hype fell short. Matches like 911 Hughes, matches like Pitbulls against Taz and Snuka was disappointing, and then the main event obviously was a very big disappointment as far as the match goes. But Sabu Scorpio was really good, and Public Enemy Bad Breed over-delivered, I think, from what we expected coming in. So I went just with a 6 out of 10. A solid show. It wasn't an all-timer, but it didn't suck or anything. Like, it was still a fun watch. So I think it was just kind of a little bit better than a middle-of-the-road show.
Yeah, 6 out of 10 for me, too. A little under 2 hours, so easy to watch, and I would recommend it. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm going 5.5. Some moments, but... The flat finishes and the wrestling in general left a little to be desired.
All right. Well, that'll do it for us here tonight. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with 3 episodes of ECW Television, wrapping up August of 94 and kind of setting us up for the, I don't want to say fall season, but there are some shifts coming into the fall. But we do have some big stuff happening on our next episode. Like, talk about all-time moments. There's plenty to come. That we'll be discussing in the upcoming episodes and starts next one. John, anything you want to talk about going on?
Just steady this week in the NFL. We'll be rolling every week. We won't take a holiday off because that'll be the big last week of the NFL season. And Year on Pop, 1979, a.k.a. Old Fartcast.
Old Dutch Oven Cast.
Jenny, what do you got going on?
Well, I mentioned all of our new episodes on the Jenny Position. Also, you can leave reviews on Podbean and my Facebook page, The Jenny Position, and you can tweet me at Jenny Position on Twitter. Mm-hmm.
The Jenny Position, le champion de la podcast.
A little bit of the bubbly.
All right. I think I mentioned New Wrestling Warzone dropped last week. Check that out. It's Chad and I are back. I had teased potentially coming this week a new No Holds Barred. It's been a while. Also, tomorrow night, Christmas Eve, will be the dropping in your stockings of the PTB and Christmas special, our yearly fun and games of frivolity. So check that out. And then I think that's pretty much it. And then we'll be back in 2 weeks. So this is it for us in 2019, guys. It's been a real fun first 13 episodes for us here. We started this back in July. I cannot believe it's already been 5 months that we've been doing this show. Almost to the day, honestly. Our first air date was July 19th. I'm recording this on December 18th. So not bad. We've come a long way. We got a long way to go. Everyone have a happy and healthy new year and a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays on top of that. For those that don't celebrate Christmas, celebrate other stuff. We'll be back in 2020 with August of 94, and things are going to start getting just a little bit more extreme. For Johnny and Jenny, I'm JT. We're out. Talk to you soon. Take care. Stay extreme. Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 10 of the Extreme Three-Way Dance, an ECW podcast retrospective. I'm JT. Joining me, as always, are my partners in this menage. I'm gonna do it again.
I like right. Your energy, John.
Let's do it. Keep the energy flowing.
It's
concurrence.
Oh Lord, you've been drinking that lemonade. No.
He's banned. He's not allowed to drink. He's chill.
Cause you make me feel